This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Glad you can be with us, SB Nation AM, as we roll along. All right, so when Tiger Woods was finishing second at the PGA, everyone was like, hey, is Tiger back? Well, yeah, he's back. I mean, you know, but he didn't hit the driver particularly well. But it's absolutely no-brainer now that Jim Furyk is going to pick Tiger Woods to be part of the U.S. Ryder Cup team when they go to France in September. But he's got to pick three other players. And I hope one of the players is Phil Mickelson. Not because I'm a big Phil Mickelson fan. Because the Ryder Cup is one of my is one of my favorite events. And if you've never watched it, even if you don't watch golf, watch the Ryder Cup. It's very emotional. I mean, players play for country. They don't play for money. They really, it's that team sport. People get jazzed up for it. You know how you go to a golf tournament, everyone's got to clap the good shots. And you're like, eh, nobody boos. They boo at the Ryder Cup. They'll scream, they'll holler, they'll yell, they'll cheer your bad shot. You see guys duffing chips. You see guys missing the ball, like mishitting the ball, skying it, completely sculling it. The nerves get to them. It's a different kind of golf. But there is nobody the United States has ever produced that loves the Ryder Cup more than Phil Mickelson. Mickelson is the Ryder Cup. He knows how to, this is, should be played. He knows how to rise the team up. The United States hasn't had a lot of success at the Ryder Cup, and lately it feels like they've got the better players. But Phil Mickelson, to me, has always been able to sort of rally and get into the spirit of the event. And even though he's not playing particularly well right now, and you could make the case that some other golfers we've never heard of are deserving of going, I think Jim Furyk should pick Mickelson. It was a couple of years ago, a couple of Ryder Cups ago, that the United States didn't play pretty well, and Tom Watson was the captain. And they lost in Europe, and the team was down. Watson was kind of giving them hell for it. And Mickelson stood up in front of everybody and basically challenged Watson. Did it kind of passive-aggressively. He started talking about each one of the members of the team in a positive light. Whereas Watson was kind of ripping everybody, Mickelson was building him back up again, and he was on the committee that put together the task force that helped the United States win the last Ryder Cup. I hope he's on the team because I love the Ryder Cup, and I love Phil, and I think they'll be perfect together next month. All right, coming up, we'll have a little bit of fun with something we did earlier on the show today. That is coming up next on SB Nation AM.
Now, back to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're going to have some fun in this next segment. We're going to dive in a little bit of entertainment, because earlier on the show, Ron played a $100,000, $50,000 pyramid question, which was hilarious. It's kind of making the rounds. And that got me thinking as to final rounds in game shows. And I know Drew McGarry at Deadspin had actually wrote down a list of the top 10 final rounds in game shows. And I loved it because I disagree with some of these, but I thought these were great. So I'm going to go through them and we're going to talk about them because game shows to me are the best. I'm glad they're in my life. I used to have fun. I've never been on one. My brother-in-law was on Jeopardy. I would love to go on one, and I would love to host one because I think game shows are great. So
I was in the audience for one and asked a question.
Did you really?
Yeah, it wasn't part of the game show. It was just, you know, in between them taping segments taping a show. And Which one was it? I don't even remember.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't a popular one. It was one of those, you know, live in Southern California as a fundraising type of thing. You can go to TV tapings.
Yeah,
and they
pay
you
to
come because they need an audience to laugh or whatever. So, I mean, I saw a lot of sitcoms and I remember once was a TV show and I had a girlfriend at the time who I went there with, and we kind of did like a newlywed game type of thing.
Oh, okay.
And I know we won. I don't know what we won. I think we got like two tickets to come back or something. It was like something lame. Like, oh, great.
I love game shows. I love them. I always like the, like, you go to Price is Right, and you always see people who just travel to L.A. and they want to go see Price is Right. And they're like from Iowa, and they just go visit. All right, so here's his top 10. Let's see. And he says, number 10, Wheel of Fortune. They give you all the easy letters of the puzzle, and they never have them. And you get some poor gym teacher, and he's in flyover country, and he's guessing words with only a C, an H, an M, and an O. I remember Wheel of Fortune when they used to – remember when Wheel of Fortune used to buy things with money you'd get? Remember that?
Yeah, everyone would go shopping. You got to go shopping.
Yeah, you got to, like, pick the Dalmatian and the hot tub and – you know, the dining room set, and
the refrigerator, China,
refrigerator, right? And then
match
everything
set luggage.
Yep, that's right. And then they would say at the end, you want this on gift certificate on account. They would say gift certificate. Most people said gift certificate. Yeah, I watched the final thing of Wheel of Fortune and they spin and they get a hardly anybody ever gets them because you're right. If you're going to give somebody the easy letters, you're not going to create like when he goes, Vanna's going to turn over the letters. She's not going to turn over a bunch of free letters for you.
Well, that and the categories have gotten so much harder. You should just be like person, place, or thing. That was it. Now it's exactly. Like before and after.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't have time for this.
What she said. It's like all these different categories. You're like, oh, man, it could be anything. Just dumb it down again. Go person, place, or thing. I don't why'd you mix the formula up?
Just tell me you don't want to give away the $50,000. Just say that at the beginning, and then we're all good.
But they do offer some of the best viral videos. I mean, one that sticks out in my mind is the guy. I mean, literally, he had spelt out the entire puzzle. And I don't remember what the entire puzzle said. I just remember the last one said Achilles.
Oh, I remember this.
And he yelled out, Achilles!
Oh, that's right. Yeah. And poor Pat's like, no.
Nope, sorry.
There's always one person on Wheel of Fortune that doesn't win anything. It's just... since it like hardly ever gets to play any action. They might win $2,000 or something, and everybody else has got a ton of money. And Pat's got to go act like he cares, is apologetic. Number 9 on the list is Hollywood Squares. I actually didn't know how Hollywood Squares did its bonus round until I read this, and I remembered John Davidson, if you won Hollywood Squares, you got to pick a key, and if the car started, you won the car. And that was all you did. Which doesn't seem like a really good game. Pick a key and, it doesn't work. All right, you lose. Congratulations. Move on to the next couple. Hollywood Squares was only... I remember Paul Lynde when I was a kid. Remember Paul Lynde? It was always center square.
That's the only thing he did, right?
That's the only thing he did, yeah.
Ever.
I don't remember him doing anything else maybe other than cameo comedy bits. But that was it. And they would say like, Paul, what's the first thing you put on in the morning? I don't know, my dress. And that was it. And they'd be like, circle gets the square. And then they would move on. Number 8 was Name That Tune. I got to be honest with you. I barely remember Name That Tune.
No, that one, I do remember that one because that one would be tough.
Because
that one you're going head to head with someone and they're saying, I can name it in 4 beats. Or I can name it in 3 beats. It's like, all right, name that tune.
But there were always songs from like some bandstand from like the 1950s. Like, I don't remember. I didn't know some of these songs.
Right. And if you three notes, forget it.
Yeah. They would go bing, 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 Mozart's 8th concerto. Oh, congratulations. I don't know. How do they do that? That's crazy. Name that tune. I think Anthony Kennedy was the host of that, if I'm not mistaken. But I don't really remember that show. But I do remember $100,000 Pyramid. And as we talked about earlier, now I remember when Dick Clark hosted the show. And when Dick Clark hosted Pyramid, he made that final round sound like it was the most important thing on television at that very, very moment. Like he'd get the crowd all hushed. He'd get the star in a serious mode. Because it was always the star that was giving the clues to the contestant. The contestant was sitting there. And then the stars were really nervous because they didn't want to make a mistake. They didn't want to blow it for them. And if I remembered, I think Michael Strahan still does this. Like Dick Clark would come and give more clues if you didn't make it all the way to the top. Like if you struggled on the last one and the last one was like famous buildings and you'd be like, Empire State. And you just couldn't get it. And then Dick Clark would come over and he would go, Sears Tower. Oh, buildings. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. Well, too late now. You're up for $100,000. You're not getting anything else after that. But that was always nerve-wracking to me. Because I tried to play with... You ever try to play Pyramid with your eyes closed? Where you try to... Like, all right, I'll figure out... I'll go along to see if I can get these. I can't do it fast enough. Just can't do it fast enough. Number 6 on the list, Remote Control. Do you remember this game on MTV?
Yeah. Colin Quinn host that?
Colin Quinn was on it, and another girl was on it that became kind of semi-famous, and...
I don't really remember it being a game show, though.
It was based on television trivia. The final round was you identifying 9 music videos in 30 seconds. And sometimes the video, there was a video on there that you didn't really recognize.
Well, that seems kind of unfair considering that MTV doesn't show music videos.
Yeah, that's right. Right, that's right. Oh, I wish I could remember the
host
of that show.
Where am I
going to
see that music video? If only there was a channel that played music videos.
Mm. Real quick, why did that happen? Did that happen because they had conflicts with the writers, the paying of the artists?
No, I think I don't know if it was that or because it seemed to coincide right around the time like when Real World took off and MTV.
Yeah, and then
was
they just went,
oh man, we could do something with all this reality TV stuff that we do.
Yeah, exactly.
And they seemed to gear more towards that way, so where we got Real World and Road Rules and, you know, I'm 16 and pregnant or Teen Moms. That's
seems, it was it seems cheaper to do videos, but it probably they probably got more money.
But it was probably cheaper for them to re-air, you know, the MTV VMAs or the Movie Awards 500 times.
Number five, Family Feud. This was always nerve-wracking how those families would stick by each other. My family would murder each other if anybody ever screwed that game up.
Especially if the person who went first just laid down. And I've seen some where like the guy's walked out of there. He's like, oh, you got 160 points.
Yeah.
You're only 40 points away.
Exactly.
That's like literally one answer away from winning $25,000.
And like name something on a Thanksgiving table. Turkey. Beep, beep, beep. Already given. And then they would say something like plum pudding. Oh,
well, it's
what?
On our Thanksgiving table.
Yeah. Name a color in the sky.
Green.
A pass. Like, what? Yeah, exactly.
All
my
right,
family
can we agree,
would
though,
murder
that,
each other.
Right now, Steve Harvey's probably the best host.
He is fantastic at it. He doesn't make out with the women contestants like Richard Dawson used to.
Nah, remember? That was, man, how creepy is that?
Remember Richard Dawson? There would be a guy going, hey, go tell me about your family. And then the guy would say, Richard, this is my lovely wife, Jill. We've been married for 10 years. We have four beautiful children. Richard would grab Jill and make out with that woman right in front of her husband. And the husband would just smile and clap while Richard Dawson was giving his wife a big wet kiss. And he did it to everybody
on
that
show. What kind of set do you have to have on you to be able to do that every single... I mean, it didn't matter
every
who it
show.
Was.
He didn't care if that husband was standing next to him, brother, whatever. It didn't matter. Boyfriend, it didn't matter. He made out with every girl in those fam. That was like part of the deal. It's unbelievable.
It's like, hey, your family could be on Family Feud, but one thing you need to know, this guy right here, he's going to kiss your girl.
He's going to kiss your girl,
he's
and
gonna,
it's going to, yeah, it's going to be real. He ain't taking her on the
girlfriend.
Cheek either. Exactly. Oh, my gosh. Number four was Price is Right. That's great. I love Price is Right. Showcase Showdown, that's the best.
But it's still the same after all these years.
All these years. And McGarry makes a really good point in his piece here. There was always remember the Showcase Showdowns that would always start out with crappy prizes? And you're like, what is this? And then it always was the big, big prize at the very end.
Here's
like
a bedroom set that you don't need.
Geez, I don't need a bedroom set.
Here's
luggage.
Patio furniture.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, God, this is turning. And then it became like an RV camper that was, you know, it was gigantic. Number three, Tic-Tac-Doe. This was Wink Martindale's game. Remember that? He had the dragon. Okay, this was, you had to accumulate, if I'm not mistaken, you had to accumulate, you had nine squares and they would randomly go out and you had to pick a square and you had to accumulate $1,000 in the bonus round and you had to avoid the dragon. And this dragon was just this 8-bit dragon that would show up and go, bah! And that was it. So like Bing, you got 100. Bing, you got 500. Bing, you got 250. Bing, you got 300. Your goal was to get 1,000. If you got it, you won. If you got the dragon, you lost. Number two, Jeopardy. That's never changed. Jeopardy is some really impossible category and a question, and you got to write it down with that stupid pen that nobody has good penmanship with. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah, they all look like they're future doctors.
Exactly. Like, just this. And then you just scribble and just tell Alex Trebek what it was.
Yeah, man, if I was on that, I would, you know, probably go Cliff Clavin answer.
Yeah.
Who are three people who have never had dinner at my house.
That's right. But number one on his list was Double Dare. Do you remember Double Dare?
Of course. Physical challenge.
I couldn't. You got a prize for every flag that you got. Like, remember, if you got the flag, you would win this awesome thing. And if you got this flag out of the runny nose, you got this awesome thing. And then you got the flag. It was, and it would get better and better and better. And those kids, I mean, were ruthless getting those flags. Craziness. I read an article about Double Dare that said the set was so gross and so smelly between takes that like they needed breathing masks to clean them off.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
But I was always so jealous. That was the game show.
Oh, yeah.
I needed to be on.
Me too.
You know, they revived it.
I saw that. Now, I have not seen the revival.
I've watched a couple episodes. Mark Summers is still a part of it, but he's not the main host. Yeah,
really?
It's time has been some. You can tell Mark has had a little work done.
You got to be honest with me. He couldn't find anything better to do than do the Double Dare redo.
Well, like
his career didn't quite.
What have you seen
launch
him
into the stratosphere like we thought?
What have you seen him in since?
Unwrapped.
He is Double Dare.
Yeah, he is Double Dare.
I mean, his tombstone will be a physical challenge.
No, that's a good point. They probably had this idea, and his agent said, "Listen, you ain't doing that show without Mark. You know that, right? I mean, he's not. No one's getting that seat but Mark."
Yeah, he changed his middle name to Double D.
Double D.
but they have a girl host who I haven't warmed up to yet. It's almost like she didn't really know. She didn't grow up with Double Dare.
Oh,
and
man.
So I could tell that she doesn't really know the game. She doesn't have a love for the game like, you know, say you or I would.
Yeah, like slide down this thing into banana pudding. Yeah. Somewhere in that banana pudding is the flag. Go get it.
She's not afraid to get messy.
Okay.
You know, which is good. But I've only seen a handful of episodes because my kids are, you know, they want to watch it, but they're not as interested in it. I'm like, God, you guys don't understand.
This was amazing.
This was everything.
Yeah.
But there was one contestant. They won the final round. There was one they were going through. This girl did not want to get dirty at all.
Oh, that's the
and
worst.
And she sucked for her partner. Her partner was diving in it. She's just covered head and toe in whipped cream and slime and whatever all that
chocolate
stuff is.
Chocolate syrup and all that
Yeah,
kind of
whatever
stuff.
It is. And, you know, she's like, she has to lift a pancake. And she's like taking the edge of the pancake and going slowly to see. I'm like, no, don't you understand? You have to throw these things around. You only have 60 seconds.
Yeah. And every
you can't
every
take 20 seconds on one challenge.
Exactly. These are each flag is a prize, and we got to load up on the prizes. So get moving.
Yes, I haven't seen. I've watched a couple of them. I haven't seen anyone go all through yet.
Yeah.
All
the way through. All right. Well, I'm gonna go.
Which
check
seemed
it out,
to be the norm back in the day for
us.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like everyone got all 8 prizes. I'm like, see, I could do it.
That's right. All right. That's a trip down game show memory lane. We'll be back on SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I got to do some research into finding out why Richard Dawson kissed all those contestants on Family Feud. There's got to be a reason behind it, right? Other than he's a horny old man. There's got to be other reasons why.
That's really the only reason I can think of.
That's it, man.
I will say this. He wasn't choosy.
No, he kissed the old women too.
He didn't discriminate.
No, the old women, the ugly ones, he didn't care. He kissed them all. He kissed them all. That's such a 70s thing to do, right?
If we could give out a rough number, how many women has he kissed?
Oh, God. Well, yeah, it's over a couple hundred, right? How long was that show on for? Years. And he kissed everybody because you're right. He couldn't not kiss a contestant. They all wanted him to. That was the crazy thing. They all wanted him to. I mean, he kissed him on the lips for crying out loud. Unbelievable. Oh, you couldn't get away with that today if you tried.
All right. So
you had their permission.
A quick Google search brought up that it's estimated an executive producer at that time who was working on the show. Estimated that he kissed somewhere in the vicinity of 20,000 women.
No, really?
I believe it.
The show was on for a long time.
Yeah, he hosted from 76 to 85, so that's 9 years. If I'm doing my math. Or probably 10 years, 10 full years of shows.
Yeah.
And then he had like a resurgence back in 94, 95. I don't know if he kissed anyone in 94, 95. That
I don't know. That seems like a different time.
Wow. So, well, one woman... I guess that he did kiss. Oh, I'm trying to. This would be fantastic if it's true.
Did he date her or something?
No, one woman became his wife.
You got to be kidding. Really?
Gretchen Johnson.
He married a contestant on Family Feud after kissing her on the show?
If I'm reading that right.
It's getting it done, Richard.
That's awesome.
It's getting it done, Richard. That's great.
But yeah, there's, I mean, we were talking about it off air. I don't know who Like, is there a celebrity out there who could get away with that now?
See, that's that. Yeah. First of all, I don't know, because we live in such a weird kind of climate now. But if there would be one, I mean, would it be? I mean, who's a beloved older star that just? I don't know. That's a great question. I can't think of one. Jay Leno? I mean, no. He's got to be someone. I don't know. No, I don't think so. I'm trying to think, and I can't think of one off my top of my head.
So he said he started kissing female contestants on the cheeks and hands and even the lips. And it all came across, it started when he came across a woman who seemed quite nervous. So he started doing it for luck.
Oh, I gotcha.
And because this girl was nervous, he kissed her on the cheek, and he said, that's for luck. And she said, she gave an answer, and they went on to win. So, come on now. let's really think about, can I do that? Guy start walking down this hall, just start kissing, you know, the ladies who work here and go, that's for luck.
Yeah, I know, right? Hey, just walk up to them. Mwah.
You seem to be having a bad day. Come here.
I want to know if there is a point when your family is going on the show that you know this is going down. I got to think, though, the producers are asking, right? Or do you just go, honey, we're going on Family Feud and you know what you got to do. So pucker up. Richard's coming down the line. So, but in the early days, I mean, you'd be horrified if somebody was making out with your wife in front of you.
Oh, God. Well, okay, and here's something else. He allegedly asked viewers to vote on whether or not they would like him to stop.
Oh, what was the vote tally?
The votes
on that
came in 14,600 to 704 in favor of kissing.
Oh, so basically he got the nation's approval that he's going to make out with these women.
Yeah, but that's how, I mean, here it is. In 1981, he planted a peck on a woman who eventually became his second wife. He was 49, she was 24.
24, getting it done, Richard Dawson. Well done.
God, there's just no humanly way possible. I mean, you were talking about it earlier, and you went on your NCAA rant, just, you know, stuff that goes on behind college doors that, you know, doesn't really benefit the program.
Yeah.
And then we have this extreme other side where this guy literally was kissing women all across America. He was like the Johnny Appleseed of kissing.
Yeah, I know. It was crazy. Like, even as a kid growing up watching it, you just knew it was weird. Right?
I don't really remember ever paying that much attention to it, though.
No, I just knew that he was kissing everybody. Yeah, I was reaching a point where I was like, man, I'd like to kiss all those pretty girls on TV. Not the older ones, but, you know, and that was it.
Yeah, I don't know about pretty.
No, not a lot of them.
I'm looking at some of this like, God, I can't believe that was a style back then.
Not a lot of them.
But he said he didn't, you know, he kissed everyone. He said he, you know, it was a big deal. I mean, think about it. It was a big deal that he, you know, he kissed black women daily and nightly.
Yeah, that's...
And that would have been a huge deal back then. I mean, it seems kind of silly now, but... I just wonder if there was an age limit. I mean, I know there's an age limit to be on the show.
Well, I don't think he kissed minors, but
yeah,
I mean, he kissed every
creep,
adult.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, he had to have kissed everybody, because who wanted to be the woman that didn't get kissed by Richard Dawson?
He's just walking down the line kissing everyone. Right? Was like, oh, hell no, not you.
No, not you. Not you. You're out.
Sorry. Throw up the X. You
know, yeah. Family Feud. God, what a show. What an amazing program.
This guy's a legend.
I know. Gosh. And it was so crazy, because that was the time. Like, when I was sick, when I was younger, when I was sick, I had to watch game shows. Like, I'd sit on the couch with my blanket and my chicken soup, and I'd watch game shows until soap operas came on in the afternoon. That's all I'd watch. And then at night, game shows would be on the TV, like The Joker's Wild. Like, I haven't seen the new Joker's Wild with Snoop Dogg. I hear it's funny as hell.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of pot references.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 420, 420, 420. Bingo. Yeah, I love Snoop.
Oh, this is when he returned back in for that second stint. He didn't kiss any of the ladies because he promised his daughter he would only kiss mom.
Oh, good for him.
Liar.
He got his fun in anyway, Richard Dawson. All right, trouble in Browns camp, or at least minor trouble in Browns camp. Got that story next.
Now, back to SB Nation AM. On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I think the second episode of Hard Knocks is tonight. Training camp with the Cleveland Browns. A little testy at Browns camp. Apparently between Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator, and Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator, when they were running drills, Haley was angry when Baker Mayfield got pushed into by a defensive player. Haley screamed, "Don't touch the bleeping quarterback in practice. Good teams don't do that." To which Williams, who was on the other side of the defensive side of the ball, said, "Somebody's got to beep and block them." Oh, Hugh Jackson stepped in to calm the nerves of these two coaches. I'm sure we'll get a full report on Hard Knocks probably next week when this is finally put together and edited. I don't know. They're actually pretty fast with that. So maybe they can get it into... Nah, they can't get it into tonight's episode if it happened yesterday. That's a little too fast. You know what I learned yesterday about the Cleveland Browns that I did not know about their starting quarterback? That it's... It's not Tyrod Taylor. It's Tyrod Taylor. Apparently, one of his offensive line members mentioned to the media that he's too nice to correct people. I thought it was Tyrod Taylor.
Is that Tyrod?
I've been saying it that way. Everybody's been saying it that way. But according to this offensive line, and then this might be trolling because he might actually be doing this to play a little prank. Maybe it is Tyrod Taylor. But when he played for Buffalo, I heard Tyrod Taylor all the time. It's Tyrod Taylor. Tyrod Taylor. That's what the offensive lineman says. And he says that Tyrod Taylor is too nice to correct people, so he lets it go, and that's how you pronounce it, even though everybody's been pronouncing it Tyrod Taylor, which is how I pronounced it forever and a day. And the only reason I pronounce it that way is because everybody's pronouncing it that way, and I just go with the traffic. But if it's Tyrod Taylor, then I'll call him Tyrod Taylor if that's how it goes. But here's the deal. I don't want to call him Tyrod Taylor if it's Tyrod Taylor, because if I say Tyrod Taylor and it's a joke, then the joke's on me, and I don't want to be a victim of one. Does that make sense?
I choose not to believe him.
I don't know. In fact, if Tyrod Taylor told me his name was Tyrod Taylor, but it was really Tyrod Taylor and he was fooling me, then I would believe that it was Tyrod Taylor, even though it was Tyrod Taylor. But if he told me it was Tyrod Taylor and it was really Tyrod Taylor, I'd still call him Tyrod Taylor because that's how it's pronounced. If that makes any sense. Meaning, here's the deal. No matter what the lineman or the quarterback says, I'm probably just going to call him Tyrod Taylor.
Until he says otherwise.
Way. And even if he says otherwise, I'll be like, "You're lying."
And at this
Let me talk to your mother.
At this point, we might just call him Ty.
This is call him Ty.
Ty Taylor.
Exactly. Oh, Browns. This is so fun. I hope tonight's episode is good. I need drama. I need some drama in the game. Actually, we're probably going to get a good episode tonight because they're going to go back into the Baker Mayfield's two touchdowns and his performance and basically the city kind of going crazy for it. And there's going to be a lot of interesting stuff tonight. So I'm hoping because this could be good or it could be awful. That was my biggest risk of having the Cleveland Browns on Hard Knocks. So I didn't know if there would be any good storylines. Now, I wonder if Todd Haley and Greg Williams ham this up for the camera. Do you think? We act differently when the camera's on, don't we? Don't you know when the camera's on?
They're supposed to ignore that the
they are supposed
on.
To be done. They're both like hot-headed guys. I mean, hot-headed in a negative way. They're both emotional guys. They're both guys that really are willing to get into this kind of thing, whether the cameras are on them or not. I know Haley did. Haley did in Pittsburgh a lot. And I know Greg Williams was the guy that, remember, what was his famous quote? "If you kill the head, the body will die," or something. Remember that when he was with the Saints and he got in trouble for it? He had some sort of like headhunting thing where you knock a guy out, you got paid money, and he got suspended for it. And then Haley was the offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh, and there was rumors that he had a problem with Ben Roethlisberger, and Roethlisberger had a problem with him, and they didn't mind going at each other a little bit. So I know these two guys, they speak their minds, and they don't mind, hamming it up a little bit. But if the camera's on, are they kicking it into that extra gear because the cameras are on? I don't know. Let me ask you a question. If you were let's say you were being filmed at the radio station or you were filmed somewhere else and somebody was being aggressive to you, and you might not be an overly aggressive guy, would you then be overly aggressive just because you don't want to look bad on the camera, knowing that the cameras were rolling? Kind of like that real world phenomenon where you kind of always know the cameras are there. So you always want to try to paint yourself in the best light possible, even if you wouldn't when the cameras were off. That's what I think Hard Knocks does to people.
Oh, it's definitely a reality TV show. So you do you're supposed to accentuate your personality a little bit more.
Exactly, exactly.
And that's one of those things. I mean, when you bring up Real World, I mean, you know, that was always like one of the big mysteries was Puck.
Puck, because we all remember season three.
Puck. Was he really that guy?
He would stick his fingers in the peanut butter. Remember, he would pick his nose, and then he would stick his fingers in the pink peanut butter.
He never picked his nose.
He
blew snot rockets.
Oh, okay. It was because remember Pedro had that complaint about him.
Yeah,
like you pick your nose and then you dip your fingers in the peanut butter.
That was the thing, but he didn't pick his nose because picking his nose is gross. He would just walk around the house and, you know, plug one nostril and blow out a snot rocket on the other.
I think I was watching Fox News the other day, and I saw Rachel, and I went, that's Rachel from Real World. I know it. And I had to Google her, and sure enough, it was. I was like, I remember that show. I remember her. I remember her politics. I know where I've seen her before. That's amazing. I'm sure she doesn't like that. The first thing I do when I see her is think about some TV show 25 years ago. Like that she was on Sharing an Apartment with a bunch of other people, a cartoonist, a doctor. By the way, those two got married. Did you know that?
Yeah.
I didn't. I saw that not that
Judd
long ago.
Yeah. What's the name? His name is Pam.
Yeah, Pam.
Yeah, they started.
He was always the third wheel whenever her boyfriend would come visit the house.
Well, I thought he had a girlfriend and he like dumped her.
Maybe that what it was. I just remember him on a rowboat by himself while Pam and the boyfriend were rowing together. It's like, you want to go with us? It'll be the three of us, really. And he's like, oh God, okay. And he's like secretly pining for her. God, Real World.
I think that's when Real World hit its peak. Because after that, it kind of went downhill.
It
was like all of a sudden I felt like people were trying to be more outlandish. Like everyone was trying to be the next Puck.
Well, that's Chuck Klosterman has a great like kind of philosophy on that. He wrote a short piece on the Real World where he talked about the transformation of where you stick cameras in a house and people don't really know what this is and people don't know how it's going to be perceived. But every year when you have the show and you've delivered the final product to your potential contestants, so to speak, or your potential participants, and they know what the final episodes are looking like, and they know kind of the direction that you're going to take the show because you've been delivering this final product, they gear themselves to fit the role they think you want to fill. Whereas the first one, nobody even knew this what this concept was, right? So everybody just acted as normally as they possibly could. Where is this going? You do this in season two, same kind of thing. Season three, okay, there's a little bit of an agenda here. I kind of want to present a case. I mean, Pedro certainly, you know, made his case for AIDS awareness. Puck made his case for being Puck. Some others did the same kind of thing. But then by 4, 5, 6, 7, all the way down to whenever it was, everybody went, I know exactly what this is. I know exactly what to do with this. And I know exactly how to act. And it kind of ruins the spontaneity of the show.
Yeah, because there were some people in there who just, you looked at them like you're not playing a cartoon character of who you actually
exactly.
are.
Exactly, exactly.
Or you're trying to, it's almost like there were times where you felt like they were trying to make a name because they don't want these 15 minutes just to end right here.
Yeah,
they wanted to further on and hopefully build a career. And some of them got lucky. Some of them were able to build somewhat of a career after that.
Yeah, and this goes back to Hard Knocks. We've seen time and time again in Hard Knocks, there's always that one or two players that are struggling to make the team that we know a lot about, that we end up knowing a lot more about, and they tend to be, they're warm to the camera, they're warm to their story of however it is they got to where they're going, and we actually are rooting for them. And then if something happens to them, they get cut or something, you just... It happened to last year. There was a Tampa Bay Buccaneer player that was kind of had long hair. He was a guy that they kind of liked. People kind of gravitated towards the kid with the Sox in Houston. Same kind of thing. Cleveland, they're going to find one guy that's really struggling and trying to make the team, trying to make a name for himself. And if you've got that vehicle and you can start promoting yourself a little bit, and you know the cameras are on and you can do some things with it, take advantage of it. Take advantage of it. Did you ever apply to be on Real World?
No.
No, I didn't either. I wanted to for season three. There was a way you could do it for season three. But then afterwards, they started wanting videos, and I was like, no. But I never was comfortable with the concept. Like, I had some friends, because I was growing up at a time when that show was kind of kicking off and whatnot. We talked about it, whether or not we'd want to go do something like that. And it seemed just a little too much in its infancy to wonder where it was going. Like, once you saw in the first episode Kevin and Julie fighting in the streets of New York, it was like, I don't know if I want to be on TV doing that. I don't know if I want to get in, like, if I eat the wrong thing in the house, or if I say the wrong thing, I end up in a heated argument with somebody on TV. I don't want to be portrayed as the troublemaker or whatever. It's a good show. Now, they're not running that anymore, right? They don't do that anymore?
No, I don't think so. I think
is there anything sort of like it?
Big Brother?
Okay, because here's what I'm thinking. Just correct me if I'm wrong here. It's like cartoons, right? I would think a show like Real World is like a cartoon. You can keep a cartoon on for 100 years because your audience is leaving you, but there's always an audience coming behind you. And if you can just keep attracting to that audience, right, over and over again, whether it's like a kid's show like Barney or The Wiggles, there's always an audience that you can appeal to, right? As the other one kind of grows up and moves on and gets out of there, the new one comes in and takes its place. I always wondered if there's young kids who are like, oh, that's so cool. Like, they film people in a house, and you're like, yeah, no, they've been doing that for 30 years. Yeah, but it's new to me. Right? Okay, great. It's new to you. Watch. That could be your thing.
All right.
And I'm wondering if it translates.
I was just doing a quick on Wikipedia. One of the people we were talking about, how, you know, they seem like some of these people try to make names for themselves later on.
Yeah.
One of them, you ever heard of the actress Jamie Chung?
No.
I mean, if you Google her, you'll recognize her right away. She was in she's the bride to be in Hangover 2.
Yep, I now know who she is. You're right.
She
yep.
was,
and she was in Grown Ups.
Yeah, and she got her start in Real World in San Diego.
No kidding.
That was her first thing.
I saw Jacinda Barrett was on a yep. in a movie, and she was in Real World 4 or 5, doing London.
I remember that. I
remember that. Yeah, I
really remember her.
I think she was. Yeah, I know. If I'm not mistaken, I think she's married to Chris Hardwick, or not Chris Hardwick. I'm sorry, wrong guy. Somebody else that's kind of famous. She's like married to him or dating him. I can't remember. But she, you know, she's now in the Hollywood lifestyle. Started in an apartment. So, all right. So Hard Knocks will be episode 2. Did you watch episode 1 yet?
No.
That's a great thing about it. You don't have to. You don't have to catch up. Like, you know the players. You know the drill. You know what Lee Shriver is going to say about opening day of camp.
It's hot.
It's hot. And the players are looking to make the team. Last year, they went 0-16. Will they win more games this year? That's what Hugh Jackson is trying to find out. Oh, Cleveland Browns. That's excellent. All right, SB Nation rolling along on SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so I have to give the Mets their due. I'm sorry. The Mets are such a bad baseball team and have been embarrassment. They batted out of order this season. They lost 26-4 or whatever it was against Washington last month. They've just... pitchers have been hurt. They've had bad injuries, foot and mouth disease. I think Noah Syndergaard got that or something. It's just been a tabloid-esque type of headlines for the Mets. Tim Tebow, a guy they could have brought up just for fun and some giggles. He got hurt. He ain't coming up. But
they started a fire sale.
Oh, yeah,
as
yeah.
Well. Started getting rid of players.
The Mets last night beat the Yankees in a one-game makeup at the stadium last night, 8-5. But it's not so much. I mean, look, bad teams beat good teams all the time. They did it in the most Yankee way possible. They hit 5 home runs from 5 different players against Luis Severino and the Yankee pitching staff. So, all right, I got to give them where your credit is due. Good for you, Mets. Good for you to have one night of joy. God, the Yankees better get their act together. They're gonna be miserable come that one game playoff against the Oakland A's, who are winning everything in sight. God bless the Oakland A's. You know what? You were talking earlier about your son being able to throw from center field. You know,
yep.
has a can. Every time I see that young kid from Oakland, I'm gonna think of your kid when he threw that guy out at first base.
That's what I'm thinking of my kids like.
Right? You should.
That's why I was getting on him yesterday. I mean, he threw it and he one hopped it to home plate. I was like, dude, come on.
So look at this guy.
Look at the video. He's seen the video.
He threw it from left center field to first base on the fly.
Yep.
Who the hell does that?
And it was almost over the first baseman's head.
Unbelievable.
That's
what a great play. Oakland is playing such good baseball right now. It's Crazy, crazy. Now, look, I don't think they're going to win the division. When the Astros get healthy, the Astros are going to win the division. They're a better team. They have better pitching.
Can we still consider it Moneyball with Oakland?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Like, I don't even know how they're doing it. Like, I don't.
Because the guys aren't there anymore, right? Aren't they?
No.
Aren't they with the Browns?
Yeah, the main guys. I think Billy Bean's still there. But I mean, like, I don't. I was telling this yesterday. I better brush up on the Oakland A's. I can't name three Oakland A's players on the team. I think Jed Lowry is one. I think
I don't think he's on the team anymore.
You don't think Jed Lowry's on the team? Okay, maybe he's not. I don't know. That's a good question. They got Chris Davis, I know, is a good ball player. And that's it. Stephen Piscotty. And the only reason I know Stephen Piscotty is because he was a former Cardinal and he went to Oakland because he's going to live near his mom, and his mom passed away. But he wanted to go to Oakland to be near his mom, who was ailing. That was the only reason I knew that.
I stand corrected.
He is?
Jed Lowry is on the team, yes.
All right. Sean Manaea, the pitcher, pitched a no-hitter. So maybe I'm knowing more A's than I think. But that's about it. That's all I got.
But I could throw a name at you, and you'd be like, who?
Yeah, of course.
Jonathan LaCroix is on the team.
Okay, Jonathan LaCroix, I know. But I didn't know he was on Oakland.
Right.
I had no idea he was on the Oakland A's.
Matt Chapman?
Didn't know him.
Matt Olson?
Don't know. Nope.
Mark Kenha?
I don't know. I don't even know the kid. Was that the kid who was in center field?
I have no idea.
Better learn them because they're winning games like an incredible rate, and they're going to go to the playoffs.